Hello, everybody. Hold on. Hi. Nice to see everybody.
19 participants.
Erev Tov. Erev Tov to everybody. All right. It's been a few days. Nice to see everybody. Everybody still looks great. Everyone looks great.
Maybe your camera's foggy.
I don't want to say anything.
Thank you. You
look. Harris is wearing a shirt. This is great. That's big news for the show. Thank you, Svi. Hello, readers. Good to see you.
I was so mad. Honestly, sometimes I feel like I'm an experiment.
All right. Okay. I'm going to mute this because it's very loud. You're more than welcome. If you are in a quiet place, to unmute yourself. You're more very. Go ahead and do that. Okay. First of all, it's nice to. You don't hear me. You don't hear me now? Oh, do you hear me now? Oh, now you hear me?
We hear you.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, Lisa can hear me. Okay. Michael Glass, you hear me? We lost Michael Glass. It was a good run. Okay. Okay, so what I wanted to learn about today... There was a lot of you on my show program, so I didn't want to overload everybody with the many very meaningful programs around the community, but I hope you were able to participate in some of them. But you know, one of the things that as our new normals hopefully are beginning to get less, and we hope that there is more good news coming, but as for now, as we're still stuck in our homes, I miss obviously teaching Torah and learning Torah, which we're doing a lot of that. But I not everything has to be just a coronavirus year. We could just like learn Torah and like learn a good topic. So what I wanted to do tonight, I wanted to learn about Sfiras HaOmer. And I want to actually share a different, a little bit of a unique approach to understanding Sfira. Some of you we could talk more about. Don't worry, Zoom Shiurim are definitely shorter than regular Shiurim. But here's what I want to do. I have source sheets that I share with you. If not, I'm going to pull it up here anyway. One of the things I didn't realize with when you start sharing your screen is that you have to, you can't see my community Shavuos thing, is that you have to not have notes in front of you that you're looking at. But let's do the following. We know that when you hear the word Sfira, most people, when you hear the word Sfira, I'll stop for a second. When you hear the word Sfira, most people get very sad. The first inclination somebody has when they hear Sfira is that they're very sad. Now, that should not be the case, obviously. Sfiras HaOmer is supposed to be a wonderful time. It's supposed to be the time in between Pesach and in between Shavuos. In fact, if you look at the Ramban actually calls Sfiras HaOmer a Chol HaMoed. The Ramban calls, I'll tell you an interesting fact, by the way, about this shiur that we're about to give. We've given little parts of this over time, but I have some more stuff in this year tonight that I haven't had in the past. But this was supposed to be for those that are keeping track of rabbinic careers. This was supposed to be my Prabha Shir in the afternoon, 12 years ago, I guess. Then after I got pneumonia and Daniel Weiss, who's luckily not on this call, but because he told me just take some Advil and you'll be fine. When I couldn't move, and my father-in-law told me, after I spent 3 hours in the hospital with pneumonia Friday night, and then woke up 8 o'clock Shabbos morning and told my father-in-law, I got to go give the drasha, he said, over my dead body. So that was obviously, that Prabha was off. But I had a shear. This was part of this, was the shear. But then the Prabha got pushed off a bunch of weeks. I couldn't really give it because it was after Shavuos. I can't give a Sfiras HaOmer shear after Shavuos. That would not have bode well for my knowledge of the Jewish calendar. So here we are many, many years later. We've given parts of this before. So let's go. So Sfiras HaOmer is really supposed to be, it's supposed to be a Chol HaMoed. It's supposed to be a Chol HaMoed between Pesach and between Shavuos. And there is a lot to talk about, which we're not going to. The fact that there is no date in the Torah for Shavuos. You just count 49 days. And when you're done, you have Shavuos. There is this build-up process, the counting of the Omer, getting towards Sfira, all of that is what the Ramban says. However, if you ask anybody today, no one's going to say Sfiras HaOmer, great time. I love Sfiras HaOmer. Look at my face. I can't stand Sfiras HaOmer. Okay. Luckily, this Friday, it's not a kula because it's coronavirus. This Friday, because it's Rosh Chodesh and because it's Erev Shabbos, the Rama says you can shave and you can get a haircut. Although, if you couldn't get a haircut before Shavuos, it's probably the same reason you're not going to be able to get a haircut now. So, unless you're now really willing to give it to yourself, if you don't have hair like me, I gave myself a haircut. It was easy. Didn't really take much, much skill. Okay, so let's change the direction a little bit. When do the period of Sfiras HaOmer, just as a brief overview, begins to get a little bit sadder when we get to Sfiras HaOmer, when we get to the Crusades. So what happened in the Crusades? We know that in the Crusades, which begin, we'll see in a second, during Sfiras HaOmer, Pope Urban II, in a barn in Clermont, France, the Pope makes a speech. And in this speech, the Pope claimed that he didn't mean what it was about to happen. And historians will say he didn't mean it. But he said, let's go take back Jerusalem from the infidels. Now, the infidels at the time were obviously not they were not the Jews, they were the Muslims. But the Pope, launched this crisis of murderers and bandits and crazed fanatics now on their way to go take back Jerusalem. And along their way, as Rabbi Schacht always used to like to say to us, along the way, they said, why wait to fulfill a mitzvah to kill Jews, to kill our enemy when we get to Israel? I have Jews right here that I could kill. So all of a sudden, almost out of nowhere, the Jewish communities are completely caught off guard and are decimated. Mines, spire, they're wiped out. And in fact, we have a lot of history between these different towns that some thought they were going to be okay, some thought they weren't going to be okay. German Jews said, don't worry, and the French Jews said, we're scared. And in the end, the French Jewry was unscathed and German Jewry was completely wiped out. And if you look what I share with you here, just to understand a little bit of the history, you have here a book called by Edward Flannery. So Edward Flannery, I do share this book often when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Edward Flannery, the book is called The Anguish of the Jews. It is well worth a read if you're looking for some pretty, pretty sad reading. And he is actually a Jesuit priest who one day is walking down the street and some Jew walks past him and sees a big cross in Manhattan, and the Jew shakes. And then this guy's like, why are you shaking? She goes, you don't know what that cross has meant in Jewish history? That's the story he tells. And he goes back and researches Jewish history. And this book, Edward Flannery, The Anguish of the Jews, is one of the most, all-encompassing, short, not really very long, books on Jewish history. He says the following: to find a year more faithful in history than in Judaism than 1096 would necessitate going back 1,000 years to the fall of Yerushalayim or forward to Hitler. Though often surpassed by others in volumes of atrocities, 1096 marks the beginning of harassment of the Jews that in duration and intensity was unique in Jewish history. He says it was the thunderclap out of the blue. Great, ill-organized hordes of nobles, knights, monks, and peasants, God wills it on their lips, set off to free the Holy Land from the Muslim infidel, suddenly turned on the Jews. And this is all of a sudden, in 1096, is the first time that you have this kind of anti-Semitism. And you can look in Robert Chazin's, unbelievable history book called In the Year 1096, that the trails of blood, smoldering ruins left behind in the Jewish communities from France of Palestine, from crusading mobs, even more than regular armies, for the first time brought to the Jewish people, its foes and friends, the utter instability of the Jewish position in the Western world. If you think about next week, we're going to have Yom HaAtzmaut. So we did a shiro 2 weeks ago in Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is what the state of Israel did for the Jewish people. The state of Israel gave them a place that there would no longer be. There wouldn't be instability in the Western world. But 1096, the Crusades were the first time, really in Jewish history, not even the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was enemies coming and saying, we hate you. We want to kill you. We don't like your God. You're done. That was Bias Rishon and that was Bias Sheni. However, the Crusades were enemies going to do something else. Nothing to do with the Jews. Go take back Jerusalem from the infidels. And along the way, they said, hey, let's get rid of the Jews. So as we continue a little bit. So, no, this might not be the most pleasant, beginning of a shiur, but don't worry, you'll get more interesting. As we continue, though, you'll see, just interestingly, historically, this is the kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av. The kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av mark when the Crusades happened. For example, Basheni Bashmonebo, on the second day of the eighth month. So luckily, we're all on mute, so now you really don't have to answer questions. The eighth month is what month? I'm sorry, the second month. Eighth day of the second month. That's Iyar. That's Iyar. If you look down here, Chodesh HaShlishi, Nisan Iyar, Sivan, the third of Sivan. All of these towns are wiped out from Pesach until Shavuos. So in the year 1096, already Sfiras HaOmer becomes changed. Now we're going to talk about Rabbi Akiva in a second, but already in our modern, so to speak, Jewish history, this is something that changes the tenor of the time. And that's why we have here the reason it's called, why are we sad? Because after Lag B'Omer Lo Meisu, even after Lag B'Omer, we'll see in a second, nobody died from Akiva students, but still where people are sad. You have to remember something very, very important. There are two minhagim that exist today when you make weddings. Okay, it used to be that there was really no weddings during Sfiras HaOmer. Many, many, many years ago. Then there was two minhags. Some people said, I'm not going to make a wedding until Lag BaOmer. And some people said, I'm not going to make a wedding from Rosh Chodesh until Shavuos. Now, essentially, you do a little bit of both. People say, well, we can make weddings until Rosh Chodesh, which is this Friday. And then some people said, well, once you get to Lag BaOmer, you can already make weddings. So really just not talking about 2 weeks of weddings. But there were people that didn't make weddings at all for the simple reason that it was a sad time to commemorate what happened in the Crusades. And that's why for all of you that get my show emails that you read through fully before Shabbos to make sure you knew what to do when davening alone, okay? I wrote there that you should say Avarachamim. Now, usually Avarachamim is not said when there is no Tachnun or when it's, some type of Yontif. Now, everybody was sad not being in shul this past Pesach for many reasons. And obviously one of those was the ka'ila. You want to hear it. You could even look at the glasses, have a whole video that maybe they want to share about ka'ila. Everybody missed the laning of ka'ila. I missed, really, the people on this past Shabbos that were screaming out, don't say Avarachamim! It's still Nisan. We say Avarachamim specifically this Shabbos because Avarachamim, if you look here at the tefillah, Avarachamim is actually said and written about for the people, Shehanahavim v'hani'imim, the love, the beloved and the dear, that v'mosam lo nifrodu, in their death, they didn't separate, they died al kiddush Hashem. And the Maharil in the 14th century says he only said Avarachamim from Pesach until Shavuos. He only said Avarachamim from Pesach until Shavuos because that's what it commemorates. So already from, just to give you a little bit of historical perspective, this idea of Sfiras Omer already becoming a little bit sadder, we can already see it in the Crusades. Okay, so just to share with you one very interesting thing before we continue on. I actually share with you, I'll show it in a second. There's a tshuva of the Shavuos Yaakov. Okay, so the Shavuos Yaakov was Rav Yaakov Reischer. He was the Av Beis Din in Worms in 1715. He tells the following story. Talk about rabbis not having difficult people. Says, not any of you. Okay, says the following. He says it was Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So it's a month from now, 1716, his first Rosh Chodesh as the rabbi of the community, as the Av Beis Din. Now, I was told many, many years ago by many, many mentors, your first year, just get the lay, in any business, get the lay of the land. Don't start trailblazing anything. So it's his first Rosh Chodesh, Nisivan. They had a minhag in that town in Worms to fast already dating back to 1096. That is 600 years earlier. It's an amazing tshuva. 600 years already, this minhag has been, you know, has been in going on. They would fast until Chatzos on Friday of when it was Rosh Chodesh. They would have mincha gedola. They would then eat to make sure they don't fast on Rosh Chodesh. Right? So he says they would do mincha and ma'ariv very early in the afternoon so they could go home and eat. The problem was they were davening ma'ariv really, really early. And he was bothered by this. You can't daven ma'ariv at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They were davening at Chatzos. That means that this Friday or a month from now, they would daven at 1:30 in the afternoon. They would mincha, Kabbalah Shabbos, go home, and you start Shabbos. Imagine that, like a 36-hour Shabbos. So he's the Shvus Yaakov. Rav Yaakov Reischer is one of the great Achronim, one of the most, an Eloi, a Baal, he's a Mechaber Sfarim, he's a Baal Halacha, and he says, no way. And he is shocked that this community is doing this. And he's screaming at them. And listen to what he says. Hold on. I'll share with you here. So this is, and it's just fascinating. So he says, Rosh Chodesh, Sivan, Tavayin, Vavs. So, Nohagu, Lisanos, Po, in Worms, Xeros, Tatnu. Xeros, Tatnu is 1096. That stands for 1096. At Acher, Chatzos, Sayom, Kol, Rosh Chodesh, Sivan. Uvizman, Mincha, Gedola, when it came Mincha, Gedola, 1:30, Mispal, and Mincha, Gedola, Vachakach, Ochlin, Gdesh, Sanav, Rosh Chodesh, Tanis, Gomer. They didn't want to eat a fast Rosh Chodesh, and then they would daven Ma'ariv. When Uchshal Rosh Chodesh Sivan be'erev Shabbos, I'm like pointing at my screen, but you can't see that. Uchshal Rosh Chodesh Sivan be'erev Shabbos. What would they do? They would daven. They would make Shabbos 7 hours early. How could they do this? And he says Uchshirai Zos. Last two lines. Tamhesi Ma'od. I blew up at it. And you know what? They didn't listen to me. Below Shamu Eli. The Shamati, the last sentence says, Shagama Rabbanim HaKodmin, my predecessors also got upset, velo also be Adam, and it didn't work. All right. Sometimes minhagim are so strong. This is a minhag that had been around for 600 years, and even the Shvus Yaakov couldn't stop it. Now, this doesn't mean that if you have a minhag in your family that you eat cheeseburgers on Wednesday afternoon, that you could say, listen, Rabbi, this is my minhag. And I have an exercise in my 8th grade class, and we learn halacha. We try to differentiate between minhag and custom. Okay, what's a minhag and what's a custom? And it's very interesting to think what is a minhag and what's a custom, right? A minhag, a custom is I have gefilte fish on Shabbos at morning. That's not a minhag. A minhag is maybe, do I say halel on the it's shul at Pesach night? Do I stand for Kiddush? That's a minhag, right? So if your family minhag is that you do borer on Shabbos, that doesn't work as a family minhag. Okay, so that's the Crusades' impact in halacha. Okay, so let's skip ahead a little bit. I'm going to skip ahead. If you have the sources, we're going to go now to the really what I wanted to talk about. And I really wanted to share this just because I think it's just something interesting to think about. And I think it puts a different spin on Sfiras HaOmer. And you could talk about it. You could think more. I'm sure you have a lot to share with. You know, not all the learning we do just has to be related to this pandemic. We should just learn Torah because all the Torah learning we do should be a schus for everything that we need, all the refuos that we need. So let's go to the next piece. We know, and we're familiar with the following story here where it says source 12. The story is told of the 12. Hello, is that Joey? Oh, hello, Joey Marmis. Good to see you. Okay. All right. So now we know that there are the famous story of the 12,000 pairs of Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Shneim Asar Elev Zugim Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. He had 12,000 students. Okay? 12,000 students. And they lived Migivas V'Adan Tifras. Okay? They lived, it gives you the borders. The question is why, which we'll hopefully get to at the end. V'Kulon Mesu V'Perek Echa. They all died at the same time. Shelo Nohagu Kavod Zelozeh. They didn't get kavod to each other. V'haya olam shameim, and the world was literally left desolate. All the stories we tell about Rabbi Akiva, you know, like we shared about for the Seder and his optimism and his positivity and his outlook. We always talk about the foxes and this story and that story, but here's another one. So he has 12,000 students and they all die of some disease. Then what does he do? Rabbi Akiva comes and he appoints five new students. Some say that this was actually Lag BaOmer. Okay, five new students. But the Gemara says at the end, what did they die from? The Gemara says Asachra. So I want to come back to this, but let's just understand for a second. There is Rabbi Akiva, the greatest Tanaim to have ever lived. Guy, a Tan who came from nothing, hated rabbis, hated learning, grows to be one of the greatest sages and role models to Jewish history. I've shared many times, I believe in the shul before, that I was once at a Geirus a few years ago, about 3-4 years ago. It was a family from out of town, and the mother was converting. I think both parents were converting, and the kids were converting also. And there was about a 10 or 11 year old boy that was converting at the same time with the family. And after they finished the process, I wasn't involved with their whole process, but I came at the end. They needed help at the end. And they go to the mikveh and do the whole thing. And at the end, the little boy says to Rabbi Reese, you know, last time when we meet, we work with potential converts, they have different questions they have to answer. So he says, you know, you asked me a few weeks ago if I knew any great rabbis. If I knew any great rabbis, and I blanked. I didn't know any great rabbis. He says, but I thought of one. So Rabbi says, great. Who did you think of? He says, I thought about Rabbi Akiva. So we said, great. He says, and he said, and I couldn't even make this up. He says, I thought about Rabbi Akiva because just like Rabbi Akiva, we both found Hashem later in life. Right? We both found Hashem later in life. So this is the great Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara tells us that he had 12,000 pairs of students, which is 24,000 students, and they all died. So what I want to share with you is the following. There's a lot to discuss about this Gemara, but I want to show you a different approach and how this approach really makes, to me, the most sense about Sfira, helps us understand the number of other facets about Sfira Saomer, and how we can look positively at this time. So Rav Shri Ragon here, there's two sources here, 13 and 14. So in source 13 comes Rav Shri Ragon. The Gaonim lived right after the completion of the Gemara, around the years, you know, about 700, 800, 900, and 1,000. Around the year 1,000, the Rishonim take over, Rashi, the Rambam, later. Rav Shri Ragon says the following line, and even if you don't have the sheet, just look at this in source 13 here. V'hamid Rabbi Akiva Talmidim Harbe. He had many, many people. Fahave Shmada. What is a Shmad? A Shmad is a religious persecution. A Shmad is not they all just died. A Shmad is because you are teaching something. You are religious. We are putting religious persecution. It's called a Shas HaShmad. Right? In general, for example, you only have to die for one of three mitzvot. Someone says, eat this pig, or I'll kill you. You eat the pig. However, during Shmad, if it's religious persecution, you would die for any of the mitzvos. And Rav Shri Ragon says, this was Shmad. They were specifically targeting Rabbi Akiva. Now we're going to see why in a second. But if you look here at source 14, Rav Mordechai Kohn, in an article many years ago, says, if you look at that Gemara, the whole Gemara is code. The whole Gemara is code. When the Gemara is put together, the Gemara is written around the year 600, 650. When the Gemara is put together, they were under religious persecution. They were under other governing bodies. They could not, I remember so clearly, when I was a kid, I was learning with my father, I think Gemara Sanhedrin. And my father was a big fan of learning from Steinsaltz. And I had my Gemara from school. I'm learning with my father, and I kept reading. My father goes, you missed some words. I didn't miss any words. Okay, my father and I, as much as I respect my father, we fought a lot in when we would learn together. But what we call the Machanta Shel Torah, I didn't skip anything. He goes, you skipped something. The Steinsaltz found the what was taken out, what was censored, were lines about Jesus, about different things. We took out certain things. We spoke in code. Their Gemara here is talking about in code. And he says here, it's all code. These Shneim Aser Elev Zugim Talmidim. This wasn't just Charusos. These were people, the Talmidim, they were soldiers. They were warriors. What were they warriors for? Well, they're going to see they were warriors for Rabbi Akiva. They were following him. And the Misa, their death that they died, it was a very difficult death because they were killed by the enemy. And therefore, we couldn't write this story. So what are we referring to? Well, we're referring to the famous debate about Bar Kokhba. The famous debate about Bar Kokhba. The Rambam tells us in Source 15. The Rambam says that you shouldn't think Shamelech HaMashiach, that when Mashiach comes, which, Mirat Hashem, we still have time in Nisan, Tzarich La'asod, he's not going to do crazy things. Right? He doesn't necessarily have to do unbelievable things or resuscitate the dead. How do I know that? Chai Rabbi Akiva was a Chacham Gadol. Not Chacham, like Sfardi Chacham, but just a big Tamei Chacham. Michach Me Mishnah Haya. And yet, he nonetheless supported, who did he support? He supported Bar Kokhba. He supported the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. And he said, Shumelech HaMashiach. V'dima v'chokach meidor Shumelech HaMashiach. Rabbi Akiva said, this is it. Now, if you look actually, as we'll see, if you skip down a little bit to who Bar Kokhba was. Bar Kokhba, there were three Roman-Judean wars. The Romans were trying to persecute the Jews. The Jews are trying to fight back. And the third one was the longest one. Now, in the end, the Jewish army is small. It makes a dent in the Roman army. But the fact that the Jews weren't going away bothered the Romans. Now, if you look at the Rambam, and this is very, very, very important, in Source 19, the Rambam says, There could be people becheskas shehu Mashiach. So what does that mean, becheskas shehu Mashiach? That means that it's very possible that there are people that could be the Mashiach, that have potential to be the Mashiach. They are in the realm of maybe one day this could be the Mashiach. And says Rabbi Akiva, Bar Kokhba, becheskas Mashiach. Not he is the Mashiach. Okay, so we're not going to talk. We could talk a different time about Chabad and about that whole approach to the Rebbe as Mashiach. But you could argue that nobody came close to being Cheskas Mashiach like the Rebbe in terms of Bali Tshuva and connection and what he did for world Jewry and Jews that never knew who they were. They now all of a sudden have found who they were. But we're not getting into that debate. If you want a different time, I'm going to have an Ask the Rabbi session. If you want to put a question, the Ask the Rabbi session. About that, people have already posed some questions, which are great. I do want to just take a second. I want to thank, I don't want to thank Aaron and Debbie Khan that are sponsoring the learning this week. So a thank you to Aaron and Debbie that are sponsoring the Le'ilei Nishmas Asara Tzipora Basar of Aaron Ruvain, Asara Eisenberg, Debbie's mother, whose yard site was this past Sunday, and Chaya Bela Bas Yeshaya Yaakov, Debbie's sister, Dr. Vivian Mann, whose first yard site is this Shabbos, the first of Iyar. We wish the neshama should have an aliyah. All the learning should be as an aliyah for the neshamas. So this idea that the Rambam saying, this could be the Mashiach. So Bar Kokhba is leading this charge. And who is his? Every rebellion and everything needs a rabbinic backer. Okay, I remember the first time that somebody in the shul, somebody came to me, they needed my signature for some communal letter. I don't know what it was. I didn't care. I'm going to put my signature. What a cool thing. Now, I didn't realize what it was, but it wasn't anything bad. But Rabbi, who could be better as a backer for Bar Kokhba than Rabbi Akiva? Now, all of this, and in fact, the Chassam Sofer says in this tshuva here, the Chassam Sofer says that don't think the Mashiach is going to know who he is. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know that he's the Redeemer, and he's 80 years old when God comes to him. And God says, take out the Jews. And Moshe says, send somebody else. So don't say that the person should know. Rabbi Akiva looks at the situation. He sees Bar Kokhba doing amazing things in battle, the Midrashim tell us, which is one of the signs. People are getting closer to God. They're selling their properties. Right in the times of Shabtai Tzvi, which was a different situation, they sold real estate. They minted coins. They were all in. Right? And we did the Gemara share a number of years ago when we learned Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemisha says in Sukkah that the approach of Rabbi Akiva is a lulav, one hadas, and one arava. Not two and three, Okay, but one, and obviously one esrog. They have we have a coin from Rabbi Akiva. In fact, give me 1 second. We have a coin from Rabbi Akiva's time. Actually, if you could talk to Albert Milstein, I believe Albert has the coin from, he has one of these coins from the time of Rabbi Akiva. That Rabbi Akiva had, they minted a coin. Here, I can show it to you right here. Hold on a second. Hold on. Here we go. So I'll show you this coin. Give me a second. It's easier when we're not on sharing screen. Here we go. So hold on. This coin right here, do you see there's a Beis Hamikdash on one side because they thought they were going back. And on the other side is, that's like a that's a very fancy lulav holder that's going to weigh you down. Okay? Mir Tashem, we should have the days where we're once again getting frustrated with the rabbi and Hoshanos. Okay? And you have one Hadas, one Arava, and one lulav. The Jews thought we're going. Rabbi Akiva sees this situation, and Rabbi Akiva says, this is happening. This is Bechezkas Mashiach. So the problem is that Rabbi Akiva is right until a point, and that point would be when, obviously, he dies. When Bar Kokhba dies in battle, obviously, this can't be anymore. I'm going to skip this letter of the Rambam, but just to explain to you, the Rambam has written a letter in 1173. It's called the Epistle to the Jews in Yemen, Igeres Teman, in which the Rambam is asked about this guy that said he was the Mashiach, doing crazy things, right? He was doing unbelievable things. He's the Mashiach, and the Jews wrote a letter to the Rambam. And the Rambam said, absolutely, like, don't believe this guy. He's not doing anything that's really valuable. People looked at the story of Rabbi Akiva and the story of Bar Kokhba as a template for Jewish history. The problem is that Bar Kokhba dies. And now Rabbi Akiva is on the run. He's on the run. And therefore, this Gemara is very cryptic. Why did only Rabbi Akiva's students die? Now, I'm not saying, and I'm not suggesting at all, that this is the reason of Sfiras HaOmer. There are obviously a lot of other suggestions of Rabbi Akiva. But one approach to this Gemara is that Rabbi Akiva was targeted because he was the leader of the Bar Kokhba revolt. And when the Romans knocked down Bar Kokhba, they said, we're coming after you. And that's why we have a halacha. Look, now this helps understand Sfiras HaOmer. Number one, there is a halacha, Source 21 tells us, that women wouldn't do melacha mi Pesach v'ad Atzeres, Pesach until Shavuos, mi Shkias hacham ve'elech, at nighttime. Why not? So the Mishnah Berurah says, because that's when they would bury the dead. Why are they burying the dead late at night? Why don't they bury the dead during the day? Why are they only at the afternoon, evening, when it's getting dark out, burying the dead? Because that's when it was dark out. And in secrecy, in the lore of darkness, they could go ahead and do these different things. And then look at this Gemara. The Gemara tells us a story about Rabbi Akiva himself. That Rabbi Akiva would always say, "Kol adam rog yilomar kol da'avid rachmano letav avid." Whatever God does, it's for the best. And the Gemara tells this story that Rabbi Akiva went and he had a rooster and he had a candle and everything. Like, he slept in the forest and this animal got eaten and the candle got blown out. But he said, "Oh, it's for the best." And in the morning, Rabbi Akiva woke up, and what did Rabbi Akiva see? That the town was decimated, and Rabbi Akiva was saved, Baruch Hashem, that his animals were eaten and his candle went out. Says Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Cook, that is a ridiculous thing. Come on, nobody could host. You know, imagine a gadol is coming to visit Chicago, and no one's going to host him. He's got to sleep at some random hotel 20 miles out of town. Why is nobody hosting Rabbi Akiva? And Rav Cook explains, as Rav Neria here in Source 24 says, Rav Neria explains, of course, Rabbi Akiva doesn't want to bring they're looking for him. So he definitely specifically goes ahead and he goes and he sleeps in the forest. He sleeps where the trees, where nobody could find him, or at least even if they found him, they wouldn't kill the whole town. Now, obviously, that doesn't work out the way he wants it. And this is a little bit about how Sfiras HaOmer begins to get its shape. That there is a lot of other sadness later in Jewish history. But perhaps the Rabbi Akiva's story is not just a story that his students were not nice to one another. Now, it is very possible. It is very possible that they're not niceness, or they're not being nicey to each other, if that's the proper language, is actually because they were fighting about how they should go about this battle. If you look, there's an amazing article in a Torah journal from 1989 called Torah. It's not printed anymore. But if you take that Gemara that we saw earlier and you chop it up, you'll find all those different things. For example, Mi Pesach V'Adat Seres, right here in Source 25, bold words, Pesach V'Adat Seres, just like we saw in the Gemara, they died from Pesach until Shavuos. That's another way to say that Rishayim, evil people, are judged. Next, the Gemara says that they died from Asachra. So tomorrow in our Parshas here, tomorrow night, we're going to talk a little bit about Lashon Hara. Asachra is given for Lashon Hara. So it could be very possible, some suggest, that the death that Rabbi Akiva's students get is because they did speak Lashon Hara about which approach was better. They said, we got to fight the Romans. We got to back Bar Kokhba. You know, the rabbis tell us in the Gemara in Gittin about the Bar Yonim. The Bar Yonim, when the Yerushalayim had a, when Asar B'Teves, when the siege was laid around Yerushalayim, the Gemara says that there were three individuals in Yerushalayim that could have supported Yerushalayim for 21 years. 21 years. One had oil, one had wood, and one had flour. And what happened? The Bar Yonim came in, and the Bar Yonim said, burn it. They burnt everything down. They said, we got to fight. We're not sitting here. And it could be that that's the debate between Rabbi Akiva and everybody else. There's obviously have to be a balance. And maybe the Gemara is telling us they did speak Lashon Hara. Now they just said, oh, I don't like you. You're smelly. But they said that you have to follow my approach. Our approach is the right approach. And this is how Sfira Saomer begins to take shape. Sfira Saomer, in what it should be ideally, is a beautiful, happy time in which we are building up and building towards Matan Torah. And another time we'll give a shir about that aspect, about building up towards Matan Torah, why we do it, all that stuff, which is great. This idea, though, is reflecting on what has happened. And there's other things that have happened. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising happened during Sfira Saomer. The Crusades happened during Sfira Saomer. And you have the story of Rabbi Akiva. But I believe the story of Rabbi Akiva is not just that he spoke Lashon Hara. It's that Rabbi Akiva was not willing to back down. And as we today commemorated Yom HaShoah, we all spoke and we heard from and we saw survivors. And those are survivors, whether those are survivors who religiously fought back or spiritually fought back or fought back in their rebuilding of communities. That is a Rabbi Akiva kind of approach. Rabbi Akiva's view of Jewish history is that even as bad things are happening and he loses 24,000 students because he tried to fight back, he appoints 5 new ones. He survived that ordeal and he begins again. And that really is what Sfira Saomer, I think, is supposed to be as well. It's supposed to be about, number one, the Lashon Hara is sometimes we think is justified, which we'll talk about tomorrow in our Parsha, class. And now it's open for men and women. We're not gonna have the same jokes that the women and I have in our, it's gonna be separate. We're gonna have to keep it clean. But we look forward to learning tomorrow night. But Rabbi Akiva is a story not just about hope and optimism. Rabbi Akiva is a story about resistance. And even though his resistance didn't end as he wanted it, his backing of Bar Kokhba, his pointing 5 new Talmidim was all about how to show throughout Jewish history we're not going to back down. And that really begins. The Romans sought after Rabbi Akiva, even though they won, because they knew they couldn't leave him alive. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in his works on Tisha B'Av, says that the Romans wanted badly first to get the leaders, then they realized that didn't work. They wanted to get the children, and that didn't work. Then they go for the books, and that doesn't work. But Rabbi Akiva is a story about fighting back. And as we finish Yom HaShoah, and as we're moving towards Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut, which are really are about resistance and identifying as Jews and fighting back whatever kind of persecution is being placed upon us, this is what Sfira Saomer is about. And, this is not a scholarly I'm not here to talk about the date of Yom HaShoah, but Yom HaShoah being where it is does have significance in Sfira Saomer. The idea of fighting back and the idea of Rabbi Akiva and hope and nobody telling us that we should lie down is what Yom HaShoah commemorates. Not only, you know, I've seen it just in the last 10 years, that Yom HaShoah has taken more of a focus on how do we keep rebuilding and not just the survivors, because as sadly we keep losing survivors, we're now able to keep to learn from them and to how to rebuild. And that's what I think Sfiras Omer speaks to. So this is what I wanted to share, a little bit of a different idea on Sfiras Omer. If you have any other thoughts, I'm happy to hear. Again, tomorrow night we'll have two shiurim. One will be the Parsha class 8:15. Then we're having a men's chabura at 9:30. If you want to join, you should do a lot of learning. But I wish you all a wonderful, wonderful night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Should I do my series? Thank you.
You can say thank you.
No, I didn't do it for real, though.
You should say thank you.
Yeah. Yasher Koach. Thank you, Rabbi. That was beautiful.
Have a good night.